from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
The Pope owns this. That is how Monsignor Charles Pope described his reaction to the failure of the U.S. bishops to make progress against clergy sexual abuse during their recent meeting in Baltimore. We'll talk to Register contributor Monsignor Pope about how we can support and encourage Pope Francis in this difficult time. And Catholic journalists covering the crisis face many challenges as both Catholics and as journalists. We're joined by EWTN News Nightly's executive producer, Susanna Pinto, for the perspective of EWTN News. Hello, I'm Matthew Bunsen, the Register senior editor and co-host for Register Radio, going solo this week while my co-host, Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register, is away on maternity leave. Mother and baby, by the way, are doing just fine, and Jeanette sends her thanks for all of the prayers. Well, as we all know, the U.S. bishops finished their fall meeting with no progress in combating clergy sexual abuse. All eyes now turn to the Holy See, with the planned meeting in February in Rome between Pope Francis and the heads of the world's bishops' conferences to combat the crisis of abuse. Register contributor and popular blogger Monsignor Charles Pope wrote recently in a post, "The Pope owns this." Well, as has often been the case, your most recent blog post has hit a nerve with our readers. I think it has been trending as the number one piece on the Register, ncregister.com, which is not surprising because a lot of your pieces do. Mm. But this one seems especially relevant to our viewers, our readers, our listeners. You simply have the provocative phrase that the Pope owns this.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And first, what led you to write this, and what led you to choose that particular title?
Yeah, well, I think I say that actually in respect, I mean, to what he did. He said, look, basically, I don't want you bishops, local conferences, I'm going to handle this with others in Rome in February, and I'm going to that's how I want to do this. So in that sense, I mean, I'm simply taking him at his word. He says that this is now on my desk, and I do have concerns about that, particularly the way that it was said, rather suddenly at the 11th hour. And I think it made things very, very painful and difficult for our bishops, too. But that said, he has a right to do it, and he did it. And so it is on his desk, and he does own it in that sense.
Well, when you say that it happened on the 11th hour, you're referring to the fact that the Holy See interrupted or asked the bishops not to vote mm-hmm. on any of the proposals that were before them that they had spent about 5 months working on since the real start of the McCarrick scandal and the Attorney General's report. Mm-hmm. How shocked were you when you first learned of that news?
Well, I was actually watching it live, and I'm like, did I miss something? They didn't have the picture on the bishop, so I could see their reactions, but you could almost see that, you know, that reflected on Cardinal Donardo's face. And again, I think it was all handled in a way that caused significant embarrassment to him and also to others. It happened. And so I think that what we have to say is the Pope had a right to ask that, and he did. I only just wish maybe it wouldn't have been so heavy-handed and at the last minute.
That timing, as you say, coming at the last minute, from your standpoint as somebody who has observed the workings of the Church for a very long time, what do you think was at work there?
Yeah. Well, I think the best face to put on it is that some bishops suggested that the Pope wants to have this be part of the whole Church, considers, not just a local conference, and that lest a local conference would somehow, the tail wagging the dog, so to speak. So I think that's the best face that one can put on it. I think the concern that a lot of Catholics have, though, is that this has been also, unfortunately, the Pope has done, like, well, for example, at the Youth Synod, the very last minute introducing the synodality concept, very little time for anyone to review it, it wasn't translated, you know, all the things that have been reported. And that this, unfortunately, I think, is also something of a common way that he does things, rather quickly out of the blue. And we also know that he tends to talk off the cuff, and this causes difficulty. And again, I want to emphasize, I love our Holy Father, and I pray for him. And I just, at times, it becomes so difficult because it hurts people, and people feel stunned and shocked and hurt frequently by some of the methodologies and the ways that he's given to speaking off the cuff and so on.
Well, you write in your piece that the greatest disappointment was Pope Francis' decision to suppress any vote or action on the abuse scandal by the U.S. bishops. But then you go on to say There's an almost complete tone deafness in Rome. There seems to be bewilderment as to why these American, quote, conservatives are so worked up. Even worse, it appears that there is intentional resistance, obfuscation, and outright refusal to grant the legitimate requests of God's faithful for a full and prompt investigation. And you're talking about them in the McCarrick scandal.
Indeed, yes. And I think that, as I say, there's a history to this. It's not just something that just happened on last Monday. This goes back, and we saw some of the things that have happened in terms of the Pope's response to the McCarrick scandal. And even prior to that, the Chilean scandal and some of these other things that I document in the column. And I don't document them too, as I think some have wrote me and thought, well, I'm trying to demonize the Pope. But I'm just trying to say, I think that we, as Catholics, have to simply be aware that there is a sort of a different thought on this in Rome. It's just not a high priority, it seems. Or it's not, it hasn't been. And the Holy Father has kind of wanted to delay and wait and so on. And for us, it feels very urgent, but I don't sense that a lot of people in Rome feel that way about this. And we just have to, I think, as Catholics in America, help them to understand how critically important this is for us, with love and respect, but clearly.
So is this more than just a sort of the classic American desire to get things done, solved quickly? Because I know that Rome, as they always say, the Vatican thinks in centuries, versus this American obsession with fast results, done quickly, let's get this problem off our docket.
Yeah, there is a tendency, I have to admit, about us Americans. And but as I say, I think that the danger that we also want to avoid, though, is that this is just a kind of a kick the can down the road, and this will eventually go away. People will cool down. People will forget, or something else will come up in the news. And so I just simply say that wherever the truth really lies, and I'm trying not to be cynical at all, I'm trying to put the best face on it, but that we're really going to have to decide this is a marathon. It's not a sprint, and we are going to have to stay at this, and I think that's why I encouraged the lay faithful to keep working with their bishops, keep encouraging them when they speak well and boldly, and also consider writing to Rome through the papal nuncio here, keep them informed about how serious we see this.
Well, to that point, one of the questions that was being asked, it was going to be voted on until it wasn't, at the bishops' meeting, had to do with how they go about reporting accusations against bishops. What sort of the underlying question is, what role lay people can play in this? Mm-hmm. From your standpoint as a pastor, but again as a well-respected church observer, what kind of role do you think the laity does need to play in holding bishops accountable?
I think it should be similar to the way we have it set up now in this country with the lay review board. I don't think we should be careful, that's why I think there's some merit in Cardinal Wuerl and Cardinal Supic's proposal that the metropolitans be once again in power. We need to maybe work with canon law to reignite that used to be in canon law in the older code. We have to be careful, because there is a divine constitution to the church that should be protected. However, I think the purpose of lay review boards is to have another set of eyes, that also lends credibility, so that some of the possible excesses of just bishops taking care of bishops and priests, all that, that there's another set of eyes and there's accountability, and it keeps everybody honest. It's the same way we do with finances. I have to report to my finance council when I owe them reports, and I have to account for every dime, and that makes good sense. It's their money.
So one of the rebuttals that I heard immediately once this idea of the metropolitan solution was being floated was, well, Theodore McCarrick was at one point a metropolitan.
He was.
So how then can we get to the point of restoring trust and what you write as a faltering credibility?
Mm-hmm. Well, again, I think it's going to be a combination of a number of efforts, and that's why I'm hopeful that although this has been moved to February, that we'll stay in open conversation about this. And do some creative thinking. I'm not enough of a canon lawyer to give you all the canon law answers to that. But I think when there is a metropolitan who himself is in question, I know there would be mechanisms that are proposed. That said, though, I do think ultimately it's got to be God's good people holding each other accountable. And we've been through long periods of church history where, frankly, a lot of clergy, including priests, were not, oh, Father, would never say anything bad about Father. We haven't been held accountable, and it's good now. I think there's a healthier relationship of lay people with their priests, and they're more willing to go and say, Father, I got a problem with that. And they ought to feel free to do that.
And you're seeing a lot of frustration among bishops, including some of the younger bishops I noticed in Baltimore. They are exasperated, in fact, at the inability to solve this problem. And they also are speaking very publicly about lay involvement in this, taking nothing away from rightful authority in the church.
Yeah. Exactly. And I can't emphasize it more. This has got to be a whole church effort. We're all God's good people. And that's why, as I say, I hope nobody takes my article here, this recent article, to mean that, you know, the Holy Father is somehow bad, but rather only that we've had some struggles in getting him to hear us, and we have to stay at that because we love him and we love the church, and we want to work with him. And that's I think, the goal here.
But there's a beautiful tradition in the church about that. I think of Catherine of Siena encouraging Gregory the 11th to go back from Avignon to Rome, something that no one thought was possible.
No, and she was quite forthright with him. I mean, to kind of summarize, you know, she kind of said to Gregory, look, your salvation depends on this. You know, you either go to Rome or you're going to go to hell, you know. And I mean, I'm summarizing. That's not exactly the way she put it. But I think that there was there was that beautiful boldness that she had. But she loved him. And I want people to know I love our Holy Father. And he looks like a grandfather to me. And I esteem and I love him. And I just want him to hear and to know that, because I'm a child, his spiritual child, but I'm an adult child, and I need him to hear and what my people are saying to me and listeners here and all those in EWTN that I've been able to start to work with. It's I hope he hears us.
Well, and you raise a very important point, and that is you are hearing from your flock, and I can imagine they've been a little frustrated over the last months.
They have. And, you know, it's from every walk of life. This is not right or left. People want to couch this. There's an NBC thing. They're trying to couch this in the whole political agendas. And I tell you, every person from every walk of life in my parish, young, old, you know, those who work on one side of the aisle or the other, they're all deeply concerned and they're hurt. And they're frustrated, too, that things are so slow. And we thought we had this fixed and now all this again. And then on top of that, seeming now slowing it down even more and slow, you know, and this is, and I just hope that everyone knows that this is all of God's people. They deeply love, and these are the people who stood by the church through thick and thin, and they've stayed with us through the Cultural Revolution. These are good, solid Catholics. These are not just hotheads on the blogosphere, as some people want to simply dismiss them. And I may be a hothead and I may be on the blogosphere, but this is not about me. This is really good, solid people. And I pray I'm not a hothead.
Here we are days away now from the start of Advent. This is going to be a significantly more penitential Advent, I think, than a lot of us had hoped back in June. What's a little bit of advice for Catholics who are frustrated but who also want to use this time to increase their holiness?
That's a beautiful suggestion. You know, I think that remembering, you know, Dr. Bunsen, all of us, that Advent really is a penitential season in many ways. Certainly had that tradition. So I think that even as we have the symbol of as the days get shorter and darker, we light more candles. Well, what's the equivalent of lighting a candle for every one of us, you know, to give up, maybe do a little bit of abstinence, even in Advent? how can I light a candle so that hearts can be opened and wounds can be healed, whether that's making amends for something I've done or calling a relative who's hurting or saying more prayers or abstaining or fasting. Yeah, so the equivalent of lighting the Advent candles, if you will, spiritually.
And we have the hope of a new liturgical year and hope of a new year in which all of us can become holier and all of us can find ways to support the church in a time of crisis.
Amen.
Well, Monsignor Charles Pope, thank you so much for coming in. And I know people can find your blog, your posts, and your columns at ncregister.com. And it's always worth a read, and it's always a joy to talk to you. When we come back, we talk to Susanna Pinto from EWTN News Nightly about the challenges of being a Catholic journalist in an age of crisis. This is Register Radio.
Have you heard who's reading the Register? Why, it's Marcus Groda.
I believe EWTN's National Catholic Register is unique from other newspapers in that it not only is committed to reporting the news from the world and the church and our faith, but it does so through the lens of the faithfulness of our Catholic Church.
For a 3-month free subscription to the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 3 months free banner or call 1-800-421-3230.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back to Register Radio. I'm Matthew Bunsen, the Register Senior Editor and co-host for Register Radio, going solo while my co-host, Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register, is away on maternity leave. With all of the focus on the actions or inactions by the U.S. bishops on clergy sexual abuse, the question can be asked, what exactly is the role that Catholic media should have in covering all of this? What is appropriate for a Catholic and a journalist? To understand a little bit more about that, I'm joined now by Susanna Pinto, executive producer of EWTN News Nightly with Lauren Ashburn. Well, for the members of our audience who may not be familiar with your work, what exactly do you do? Or I guess in some ways, given your day-to-day routine, what is it you don't do?
Well, I'm the executive producer of EWTN News Nightly, so I help to guide our coverage of all the news from a Catholic perspective.
And you and I have a chance to work together on a lot of projects, including most recently the Synod in Rome. We were both in Baltimore for the bishops' meeting. So the idea right from the start of crafting a program like EWTN News Nightly, and now I think the full title is EWTN News Nightly with Lauren Ashburn, right?
Of course, yes.
Sort of the guiding principle of a news program like that. How do you go about establishing the parameters for something like that?
That's a great question, Matthew, and it's really been a tremendous opportunity that EWTN has given us, and that is to find the Catholic angle to the news of the day and to really to help our audience make sense of that news on a daily basis. So, obviously Catholics were interested in all the news in every sector of society. And even though it may not have to do directly with our faith, there is always an illumination that our faith will give us to any given topic. So what we try to do is just really when there is a direct faith or moral aspect, we really try to highlight what the church teaches when it comes to that issue. And other issues where there isn't perhaps such a direct impact, we just try to look at it from a human perspective, always putting the dignity of the human person at the center of the story.
And a program like News Nightly has to cover the secular, it covers the sacred. That's a tall order for any broadcast, especially one that wants to be faithful to the church, especially given where we are in culture today.
It is. It really is a tall order. And I think, when it comes to issues of public policy and also issues of faith and morals, our newscast really, we try to do the best job we can to cover all those, to deliver on that tall order. And so I think on a day-to-day basis, that means really trying to make sure that our audience knows when it comes to issues of public policy how the church would guide us in making public policy decisions, and really where that intersection is between Catholic social teaching and public policy. And right now, there are so many issues that that have to do with moral issues, and so many issues that where the Catholic social teaching can really give us so much light and can really guide us and should be guiding our politicians. So we like to think that we're doing a service to our audience and helping to inform them and educate them. And when it comes to other issues where perhaps there isn't so much a Catholic perspective, we just bring a very human perspective to those stories.
So the spirituality of what we're trying to accomplish, too, is something that is sometimes overlooked even by those who are frequent watchers of the show. How important is it for the program that is put out every night to be anchored in the proper disposition and the process of discernment.
It's absolutely fundamental, I would say. And I think that we really take our cue from our foundress, Mother Angelica, who founded a network in order to catechize and evangelize and to teach the public about the teachings of the Catholic faith. And we try to follow her example in that when it comes to news. And that means really anchoring the news in the teachings of the church. So our editorial values are the teachings of the church, and we really try to make sure that we can articulate and shed light on that teaching as it has to do with public policy and issues that are of legislation that are going through Congress and issues that, you know, even the President of the United States is dealing with on a daily basis. The church has so much to teach us and in every aspect of our lives, and that includes how we digest and understand the news.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the topics that has been covered by News Nightly almost from the very beginning is the ongoing crisis of clergy sexual abuse. From the perspective of a very seasoned reporter such as yourself, a journalist, how hard has it been to be a Catholic journalist covering what is the largest story, certainly in American Catholicism, in the last 100 years?
It's been very difficult. Of course, as a Catholic, this story touches us to our very core, and it has really shaken, I think, every faithful Catholic, and it really has been a challenge to cover, I would say. I think that, of course, those of us who are Catholic journalists following it, this is the most important thing in our life, right? The Catholic Church. And so when it comes to a scandal of this size, it has been extremely disillusioning, you know, I could say depressing, really something that's rocked our world. But I think that it's so important that we as Catholic journalists shed light upon it and that we tell the stories of the survivors of clergy sex abuse, and we really try to help purify our church by doing so. I think that that's really, you know, the only way to fix this problem and to move forward is really to highlight the truth and to make sure that this sin and these crimes are eradicated from our church, where they have no place. And I think that the lay faithful especially have been, you know, really very, you know, they've made their voice very, very clear, and they've raised their voice. And I think that's so important, because I think this is a moment, this is a watershed moment in the history of the modern church.
So walk us through the process that was involved just in this last week. We were both in Baltimore for the bishops' meeting, and obviously it ended in several types of failure for the U.S. bishops. How did you go about, as executive producer, crafting the coverage for what was such a tumultuous and at times frustrating experience for so many Catholics?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a real challenge, but I was lucky enough to be on site at the bishops' conference with you, Matthew, as you know. And so what I really tried to do, it's a great exercise for me, because usually I'm not in the field, and usually I'm you know, helping my reporters and my staff in-house. It was a great experience because I was actually in the field hearing what the bishops were saying in real time. And so what I tried to do, I kind of put my reporter hat back on, and I listened to what the bishops were saying, to the various comments, and as they were speaking, we were trying to understand what the story was. And of course, we heard that first thing Monday morning. I mean, pretty much out of the gate, as the bishops were beginning the public part of their meeting, we heard the news that the Vatican was requesting that the bishops delay voting on measures to combat clergy sex abuse. So at that point, we kind of knew immediately what the story was. And just from on a practical level, what I really did is try to listen to what the bishops were saying, try to see which were the voices that were emerging that had you know, reasonable and things to say that were backed up by evidence, and to try to collect all of that and tell a cohesive story to our audience. So really just trying to make sense as it was going on. I'm in contact with my reporters and my producers and our anchor, and just talking constantly, really a lot of communication during the day. And then we really tried to identify who were the voices that articulated the different points of view in the Bishops' Conference. And since I was on site and I was hearing it in real time, it was much easier than if I were in the office listening through a feed. So while it was a challenge, it was also a very good experience to be in the field for me and to understand what my reporters go through on a daily basis, because there are so many challenges. And, of course, when it's such an important story, this is, as you said earlier, it's one of the biggest stories in modern Catholic history. The pressure was really on to get the story right. But luckily we were able to talk to a lot of bishops who were very forthright and had some very strong opinions. And so that made for, wonderful content. And that really was, that way our audience could really connect, go right to the source, to the bishops who are making these decisions and participating and, bringing their ideas to the forefront. So that's how I tried to do it. And I hope that it was a service to our audience. We wanted our audience to be able to really understand, and hear from as many, main sources, first sources from the bishops themselves, and as well as highlighting the experience of survivors of abuse.
And there's a task, too, isn't there, of finding a way to present these stories while fulfilling the expectations of viewers. Some who feel that we're not strong enough against Pope Francis, others who feel that, no, we are far too aggressive against Pope Francis, when in fact the reality is we are not enemies of the Pope, as some media like to portray us.
Absolutely, Matthew, and we're in such a tough spot sometimes because I think because of the catechetical nature of the network, that now that we are in the news business and EWTN has branched out into providing news for their audience, I think sometimes our audience has a hard time understanding that distinction, that we may be reporting things, but we're not taking aside that, things that we're reporting the facts, we're trying to give our viewers a full understanding of where each side, what their positions are and what their rationale behind their positions. And we're trying not to take a side. Of course, our editorial values are rooted in the teachings of the church. That's always going to be our baseline. But oftentimes when we are just simply reporting things that people are saying, the audience sometimes thinks that that means that we are backing them up, or we're saying we're supporting that point of view, and when that's not the case. And when it comes to the whole scandal and Pope Francis, yes, I think that, we've been accused of everything, of, not being hard enough on Pope Francis, being too hard on Pope Francis. And I think that, we have to walk that fine line of presenting information, but not necessarily telling our audience what they should think. We want to provide them with all the facts and provide them with a clear understanding of what the church teaches, and beyond that, we leave it to our viewers to make their decision.
Well, Susie, we'll have to leave that there for the moment, but I appreciate your coming in and giving us the time to talk to everyone about the work that you do and the work of EWTN News Nightly.
It's been my pleasure, Matthew. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Sadly, we're out of time for this week. But remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Also, be sure to listen to our podcasts of this show. Thanks so much for joining us here on Register Radio. A special thanks to my guests this week, Monsignor Charles Pope and Susanna Pinto. For Jeanette DeMello and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Matthew Bunsen. Until next week, please take care, and God bless.